Good evening. My name is Bill, and I'm here with my Kathy at City of Angels. Tonight's family surviving the holidays. We want to thank you for tuning in tonight, and we'd like to say that if you would like to reach out to Kathy and I, you can email us at Kathy with a C and Bill at cityofangelsnj.org. We'd love to hear from you, give us ideas, some of your challenges, some of your thoughts, questions, and maybe we use your programs. If you need assistance or intervention right now, you could call City of Angels at 609-910-4942. City Angels is a nonprofit organization that really works with families of addicts and addicts themselves. They have many programs, 12-step programs, creative recovery, woman addiction, laughter and recovery, relationships and recovery, saving lives, many programs they have specialized for you. They're located on Dwyer Street in Yardville, New Jersey. You could go there. There's programs just about almost every night of the week. And you can find them online at City of Angels, cityofangelsnewjersey.org. So I want to go over our outline tonight. We're going to have Kathy read us an opening charge. I'm going to go through some fun facts and stats and myths about the holidays. We're going to transition into surviving the holidays, you know, some general ideas, boundaries, and strategies. And we'll transition into a spiritual aspect of our program, which would be balancing mercy and grace with justice and boundaries. And then we'll do a little segment for our recovering addicts that are out there that'll help them with some ideas and strategies they could get through the holiday season. And then I'll wrap it all up with some closing thoughts. So welcome aboard, Kath. I'll ask you to get started with reading us our opening charge.
Yeah, we're really excited about this show and what we have to bring you. So our opening charge is called Being of Freedom. And the following written by a Hazleton retreat attendee wishes to remain anonymous. Picture a bird spreading her wings to fly. Carefree, worry-free, independent, a creature of God. She can see the world from a different heights and various directions. An infinite number of our free being is defined by an inner sense of a fulfilled self that is not dictated by what others think, say, or feel. We do not live through the small self who thrives off fear, anger, and greed. We see through the eyes of forgiveness, accepting what is, and do not strive for perfection. We do not spend ourselves until we have nothing left to offer, for our purpose in life is simply to serve God, to love, and to support others. We love with our whole heart, but do not give our heart away until there is nothing left from which to love. We validate our every drastic and colorful emotion, realization that these emotions do not dictate the direction of our lives. We think with our every bit of God-given intelligence, but are humble enough to know we cannot outthink God's plan. We give recognition and nurturing to our inner child who plays unfrightened and uninhibited. We live fullest and do not worry about the imperfections of yesterday or try to plan a perfect tomorrow. We live in the glory of now. Looking for deep wisdom, we are the curious seekers of life's dazzling and most puzzling questions, understanding that no being of this earth has all the answers or knows the whys of God's marvelous creation. We discover that the questions are as vast and infinite as our higher power. We travel the world to serve the suffering and feel compassion. We give up controlling the destiny of others so they can seek their own higher power's purpose of being. We offer strength and hope to those who have forgotten that they too are a creature of God's doing, and beyond the suffering we see divine intervention everywhere we look. We do not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We comprehend the word serenity and we know peace. We live a life of balance by taming the many voices within so that they may serve their individual purpose without taking over and destroying the harmony of our being. We give up the mastermind of our own self-will and follow the guidance of God's Spirit and live a humble existence. We know the gift of life comes from deep within by experiencing the gratitude of this very moment. We accept that thy will leads us to true freedom.
Thanks, Kath, for that thought, and I hope you're able to glean something out of that and understand your position in life and people around you. Now we're going on our next section, which is called Facts, Myth, and Statistics about the Holidays. The myth has been repeated so many times that most people consider it common. And this is what it is. More people commit suicide between Thanksgiving and Christmas than any other time of the year. Right? We've all heard that. It sounds reasonable. It simply isn't true. Contrary to popular belief, December actually has the fewest suicide attempts of any month of the year.
Yeah, that's different. I didn't know that.
Yeah, while seeming encouraging may be actually more complicated. It's actually a little complicated. Here's why. While suicide attempts tend to drop just before and during the holidays, there is a significant uptick in suicide rates following the holiday and Christmas season. Matter of fact, a 40% uptick. So if we're thinking of sides, it's really right after the holiday seasons, the first year, we really got to watch those around us who have that tendency.
Well, yeah, because January is so, like, boring. The holidays are over. We months till Christmas, those of us who, I mean, till spring, and yeah, those of us who live in this area. Yeah,
January through March is tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gray, cloudy, nothing's going on. With all the excitement of holidays over, you kind of get a downer. So, yeah, you got to watch that. Actually, during Christmas, there's actually an increase in other kinds of pathology, such as mood disorders and substance abuse. So you actually got to watch them. CDC, the National Center for Health, National Center for Health Statistics reports that suicide is in December. It peaks in the spring and the fall. This pattern has not changed in recent years. The holiday suicide myth supports misinformation about suicide that might ultimately hamper and prevent efforts because we're looking at Christmas time and we're not looking at after the holidays. And so, therefore, we're not really being aware of that to help people. So that's what it says, you know, it can ultimately help prevent, helping people. So be aware after. Suicide remains a major public health problem. It is 10th leading cause of death for all Americans. Mm. Each year, we lose 36,000 people take their own lives. 36,000. Wow. 65 days. In addition, more than 374,000 are treated in emergency departments for self-inflicted injuries. So, you know, the statistics show you got to be aware. All right. Now we're going to go into our next section, which is surviving the holidays. Ah, Christmas. How do you feel about Christmas? When you think of your Christmas seasons and past and what to look forward to, do you have those thoughts that bring these warm, loving family, cozy fireplaces, sugar plum fairies, and the very gifts that you've been secret for? It's definitely the most wonderful time of the year, right? Well, unless you are the loved one of somebody with an addiction, then this beautiful snapshot can look completely different.
There's nothing as crazy as a dysfunctional family. You could put your half your life savings into therapy, good therapy, effective therapy, and 15 minutes into a holiday reunion, you still become hopelessly enmeshed in the same old crazy dynamics. Your assertiveness training goes out the window the minute your brother begins his traditional temper tantrum. And a mere sigh from your grandmother triggers an attack of codependency, so severe that you end up giving her your house.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, you think about it. The Christmas season is really a difficult time of the year for people, especially those who are struggling with addiction in the family.
In the family. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot more anxieties that come to the surface during the holiday season. You get together and you just feel like you're walking on eggshells, and there's a lot of anxieties, and you guys, you're waiting for something to blow up. You're waiting for the addict to act out. You're waiting for a family member to say something that's just going to go over the edge. You know,
it's true.
It can be unbearable for both you and the addict. You know, it's important, therefore, to have a clear sense of how you're going to want your holiday season to go. And we've got to take steps to achieve that goal of a smooth holiday season. And what's that mean and how we're going to accomplish that? So, you know we can't control or change another person, but we sure would like to, right? We could change our choices and our reactions. So to give ourselves some self-respect, we're going to help you today to put together a plan strategy, boundaries, so that you can have a game plan ahead of time so you're going to know what you're going to be able to do. All right, there's a lot of people around us with addictions, right? And and we feel, matter of fact, there's probably more help out there for the addict, right? We could send them away to a program if they want to go, you know,
they AA. They got NA. NA. A lot of programs.
But, I mean, when you think yourself, are you going to any programs? And you think, well, no, what's out there? There are programs out there. The addict, first of all, they're is so involved with all those programs, AA, like Kathy was saying, and NA and so on. And there's their mothers that are always looking after them, their father, sister, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins. They're all involved with the addict's life in some way or another. Even co-workers are involved with the addict, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with your addict and the worker acting with their workers, their bosses, doctors, therapists. But we feel like our own life, there isn't as much support.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, perhaps maybe you have a support group yet, which is what Bill and I really want to encourage. There's Al-Anon, there's Alateen, there's Nar-Anon. There's so many different options out there. You could call a therapist, a life coach. I mean, there's so many people out there that are willing to help and that want to help the family.
Yeah, so there actually is help for family. I know it's hard for you to see yourself going to one of these programs, but I'm telling you, it works, because you're going to find people that have the same common problem. And you're going to hear those that have gone through it and worked with experience of recovery and healing and learning how to posture and position themselves with their addicts in their lives, that it's going to encourage you. And it's also going to strengthen you to be able to make those decisions. So a lot of times, you're afraid to share what's really going on in a family. You kind of, you know, you'd rather, you don't want to go to these programs because you're ashamed. Mm-hmm. You want to isolate. And that's really a part of our sickness, is that we keep ourselves in isolation. We learn at a very early age how to pretend that everything is okay. And we take that in our lives. We present that stiff upper lip, right? You know, I could just grin and bear through this and white knuckle it. We keep this facade going on.
Oh, yeah, and it would be terrible to tell anybody what's going on. I can't do that. There's nobody around that knows what it like,
right,
like what I'm going through or has something like me. That's a myth.
I agree. And don't you feel like you're tired and exhausted because you're desperately trying to control everyone and everything? You're trying to make everything go smooth. I love my family. So you're trying to help that addict. You're trying to help the family. You're trying to balance 1,000 balls in the air to keep everything, you know, going smoothly. And you're not sharing with anybody. You're not really getting some therapy. Maybe one close friend you'd be sharing with, you know. So, but, you know, we really don't want anybody to know the full truth, you know, because we don't want to be judged, right? Oh, my neighbor's lives are so perfect and getting along so well. I don't want them to know that mine isn't, you know, and you may lose those friends. And also, we normally say this. We don't want to hang all our dirty laundry out for everybody to see. We don't want to open a closet for the skeletons that's in there. And I agree. We don't need to hang it out there for everybody, but we also don't have to go to the extreme that we go through, which means we isolate ourselves, we keep ourselves sick in secrets, and not have any support system. So we really need to move in that direction of how do we put up a plan for the holidays, including support systems, to get through it.
So we believe that healing is really possible, but we have to let go of the old family legacy that secrets that we keep secrets. It just doesn't work. And the only way we can start to heal is by choosing to start to share what is going on with our family. And if you think your friends that you know don't understand, you know, addiction and all, then that's fine. That's why we suggest you get people in recovery such as Nar-Anon, Al-Anon, because those people know exactly what you're going through.
Yeah.
So we need to allow ourselves to be vulnerable, to talk to safe people. And I know what we're saying takes tremendous courage to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you got to find that safe people because, you know, you may have your closest friend, but guess what? Your closest friend may be just as sick as you are as far as keeping secrets and And they're not really going to challenge you to do what you need to do to be healthy because they want to be your friend. So they just, you know, you just talk about what's bad, what's not going right, what's going on. And you're really not making plans or strategies for healing and recovery for you and the way you respond to the addict as much as just dumping on your friends. So you got to find safe people, supportive people, but that are also going to lead and guide you.
And so one of the things that I want to tell you is secrets keep us sick. And so until the decision is made, even if it's by only one person in the family system, that they're going to start talking about what's going on, no healing can take place for anyone involved. Yeah. It's just very important to talk about what is going on with somebody.
So there's your first challenge when you get through the holidays is you need to identify somebody that you can talk to, safe, supportive, whether it's therapist, counselors, pastor, priest, somebody, not just your closest friend that you dump on, unless that relationship is very healthy and they are helping you set up good and strong and safe boundaries.
I mean, I'm in Naranon and I have such good friends in Naranon. I mean, yeah. They're supportive. I feel like they're part of my family.
Yeah. They allow you to share what's going on.
Oh, yeah, and they understand it. So it's just an amazing thing.
And honest feedback, you know, allowing yourself to have honest, authentic relationships. Says, this is who I really am and what I'm really going through. I don't have to pretend that everything's okay, which we had talked about, learning how to pretend. Absolutely. If you're, you know, the one of an addict, you're likely to face an upcoming holiday season. So therefore, what? You're going to have some fighting, maybe some shame and guilt because in the past, well, you know, the holiday season is filled with ridiculous hype. We see ads in the paper portraying that special season and we're all supposed to be loving and joyful. Let me ask you this. Year after year, is that what's happening in your life? Like, I like to pose a question Dr. Phil would say. How's it been working for you? How's it been working with you and your addict in your life? You're probably saying it's not very well, actually. Most holidays and most family get-togethers are chaotic, crazy, and so on. Well, let me ask you, are you willing to try something different this year? Are you willing to listen to this program and come away with some strategies and learn what to do?
And now you're panicking and feeling like, oh no, what should I do? I don't know how to change anything.
Yeah. So we're going to help you. We're going to give some suggestions, some guidelines. These are just guidelines. You can build off them and do what you need to do.
So our strategy is to talk about giving up hope. I also call it lower expectations. So you know how the Serenity Prayer says, God, grant me the ability to change the things I cannot accept.
Wait a minute.
What?
Say that again.
What? God, grant me the ability to change the things I cannot accept.
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah, what? Tell me that's not right?
No. That's funny. But,
that's
but it's
how
true.
It was.
Yeah, but it's true. We're always asking God, give me the ability to fix this person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to fix the person. I'm going to fix the family. So you're right. A lot of people, so you said, God, grant me the ability to change the things I cannot accept.
Yeah.
And really, it's supposed to read,
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Accept the things, not give me the ability to change them. Yeah.
So we all want our families to cease and desist from the things that affect us, like fingernails on a chalkboard.
Yeah. We would like the family to be what we want them to
exactly.
be. We have this image expectation, mm-hmm. there's where Kathy said lower the expectation, mm-hmm. of what we feel it should be, not what it is.
Exactly. So I think that it might be pretty smart to think about what you wish your family was like for a moment, and then prepare to accept them, even if they behave like they always did.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you acknowledge what you would like it to be.
Yeah,
you can take a piece of paper down and say, you know, I would like Uncle Ralph to come over and not embarrass us by hitting on the young girls there. Mm-hmm. I would like my addict brother and my addict cousin to come along and not make themselves look like idiots.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
You know, I wish that they would come over and not you. You could put a mm-hmm. list of what you want, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But what's going to be more important is, like you said, accepting them that they may be that way.
Yeah.
Right? Because
they could change.
They could have changed. If they're working their program.
But the chances are they probably haven't. And so if you lower your expectations, remember what it was like last year, And just prepare to take care of yourself in the midst of all of it.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, boundaries mm-hmm. and strategies. Because mm-hmm. what I put here is, you know, be prepared to accept them
just in the way they behave.
And it's like, wait a minute. What happens if my nephew jumps up on a table, he's drunk, he's up on a table dancing and gyrating all around.
Oh, no.
And it's like, what? So it's hard to say, so I'm just supposed to accept that? Because I know that's what you're saying in your head. So I'm just supposed to let him do that. Well, I think there are boundaries.
Yeah, it depends on where he's doing that.
Yeah, and you determine what, yeah. Because for instance, if he's doing that in your house, if he's doing that in your neighbor's house where you've been invited for a party, mm-hmm. or if he's doing it in your family's house, but not yours, let's say your brother's house where all the family's together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that would constitute different strategies.
Exactly.
And different boundaries.
If it's my house that he's doing that with, then I'm certainly going to ask him to get down and probably leave.
Yeah, because you have the right to do it. It's your house. If it's your neighbor's house,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that if I know this is in the past, then probably I know that I could say to my neighbor ahead of time that, look, you know, you invited my whole family over. And this is breaking those secrets again.
I
need to share with you that if my son comes, mm-hmm. he does have a drug issue or alcohol issue. But I just want to let you know, because you're talking to your neighbor, mm-hmm. so let's say her name's Mary. I just want to let you know, Mary, feel perfectly comfortable asking him to leave if
Absolutely.
You want. I would never take any of it because this is mm-hmm. your house. So I want to empower you mm-hmm. to do what you want. See, that's breaking a secret.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling the truth. It's setting yourself free.
Mm-hmm.
It's empowering Mary to feel comfortable, because if you didn't talk about it ahead of time, then you get there and he's doing that and Mary's nervous, like, oh my goodness, he's an idiot and I don't want to hurt your feelings. So I'm not going to say anything to him. I'm just going to let him be an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you overfunction and you tell him what he should do. You start getting into his business, but it's your neighbor's boundaries that need to be
Absolutely.
Set.
Absolutely. And the same thing if it's, you know, in another family, say it's your aunt and uncle and it's your brother acting out. Well, you know, it's their nephew. They're going to set a boundary, and it's not our job to always monitor what he's doing.
Yeah.
Wherever, whatever house. So the boundaries are different depending on where you go.
Yeah. And there's healthy and unhealthy interactions, because I think about if I'm a healthy individual and that's my brother, if I found a moment to say to him, you know, hey, I think you're acting out a little bit here. I just think you're out of control a little bit. That's okay if I can let it go with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to if I'm then going to engage him in an argument over it when he starts saying no, and then my codependency starts coming up and I
exactly.
feel like I got to take control, I got to make him behave, then that becomes unhealthy.
You're right.
You know, so there's a healthy where you're allowed to say something to somebody and a friend of yours say, whoa, you know, I just feel like you're kind of extreme. But then I got to let it go. Let it go.
Right.
You know, whether they hear that and what they choose to do.
And maybe you don't want to call them 100 times saying, what are you doing now?
Where are you at now?
What are you doing now?
What are you doing
now?
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't pick that up. Don't say that. Why are you doing that?
No.
Then that tells you.
Then you've crossed the line.
Yeah, you're just too over involved. So I'm going to help you with these boundaries. How do I know how to set them? What boundaries do I set? When do I put them in? You know, so again, we were just saying, you're allowed to take a sheet of paper, write down the way you would like things to go. Kind of highlight those things that you anticipate may be crazy. Remember, uncle hitting on a 20-year-olds or your addict son or husband acting inappropriately. You're allowed to put those together and say, I wish those didn't happen. And we said, be prepared to accept if they do. Now, given your family members will probably be their own same self unless they're in a recovery program. You need to decide how much contact you're going to want with them. So, for instance, you may turn around and say, look, I cannot stand to be with Uncle So-and-so one-on-one. He keeps hitting on me, keeps flirting with me. He's 60 years old. I'm 20 years old. He's hitting on me. I'm not comfortable. So, therefore, you set a boundary. You will not interact with Uncle So-and-so
exactly.
one-on-one. Mm-hmm. If he's in a group with 6 people around a table, maybe, but not one-on-one.
And I also want to widen this a bit. You know, we're talking about families and addicts, but I also want to, bring to the forefront that this information is really good for those who've had abuse and you know, any kind of dysfunction and stuff in a family.
That's right. Yeah. It doesn't
you know,
just
use
have to be you
with
an addict.
Yeah.
If you've been violated and so on. And
mm-hmm.
We've had that experience as life setting those boundaries. You know, you may want to bring somebody with you. So right there, mm-hmm. you could write down that you need to choose who and what you want to interact with and how much. You may not want to interact with certain people at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to bring somebody with you that helps you feel comfortable in the party situation.
Oh, I've done that in the past when I've had, you know, when I was struggling through some of my abuse issues. When I would attend or when I would have family functions at my house, I would invite my friends. And they would be, you know, good neutralizers because your family's going to act a little bit better around somebody else. And then you have support right there with you to keep you centered.
Matter of fact, you know what we've done? We've even done parties at our house here. And we have invited what we call neutralizers. Mm-hmm. So because we know we're going to have certain people here that push our buttons,
yep, exactly.
challenge us. Mm-hmm. And we don't want that happening. So we will invite friends, other friends that are neutralizers, knowing that if they were there, that type of behavior, action, and line of questioning won't occur.
And so I know that
you could do that.
People that are my, you know, my safety net, having them there just empowers me and helps me to feel so much better.
So here's the thing you want to do. Listen, you got to come up and answer these questions before getting engaged in your holiday season.
Absolutely.
Prior to the event, what are these boundaries? We just asked you a couple. Who do you want to be in contact with? Who you don't want to be in contact? Who do you want to be in contact 101? Who you don't want to be in contact 101? So then you could select when you're in that room who you're going to talk to ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Uncle so-and-so, no one-on-ones, group only. So-and-so, no contact whatsoever because he's been my abuser. You know, you set that up. You decide. How long? Write these down as we're mm-hmm. telling them. You decide ahead of time, how long do you want to be there? 1 hour? 2 hours? 3 hours? My wife and I have gone to gatherings and said ahead of time, how long are we going to stay?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. An hour, maybe an hour and a half max. We're out of here.
Yeah.
You see? Mm-hmm. And then we'll check with each other throughout the party because she may be interacting with certain people.
And then if it's going well, we may adjust that. We always have eye contact.
That's right. But the point is
We plan ahead.
And this is just normal everyday get-togethers throughout the year. That's nearly the holiday season. Her and I come mm-hmm. up with, how long are we going to stay here? Mm-hmm. So write that down. You may want to have a friend call you. Mm-hmm. Depending on the chaos in your life, you may want to have a friend call you sometime. So you know you're going to the party at 8, mm-hmm. and you say to your friend, call me at 9 to check in.
Absolutely.
And be honest with that friend. How's it going? Well, I'm crazy. I don't feel it's not going well. Then that friend could encourage you, get out.
Right.
Time to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I came with my husband and the kids in the car. I'll come pick you up.
Yep.
Plan ahead.
Yep.
Who could come and get me out of there? How do I want to get there?
It's
rental
good.
Car so I could just leave, even if my family chooses to stay? You know, these are decisions that you have to make. Keep in mind,
this is really important.
If you don't set and maintain clear, healthy boundaries with people who have been inappropriate to you, listen, you are enabling their dysfunctional behaviors, as well as your own codependency. And listen, this is not a loving act toward either of you. By allowing this abusive relationship to go on, you have to set healthy boundaries.
So again, you know, we mentioned earlier that it's really important for everybody during the family, if they have some issues, to get help. So you may enlist other family members, like we were saying earlier, to tell the truth about it and enlist some help with other people. And there's skilled professionals that you can even call. A lot of people do Skype and telephone and email help nowadays.
Yeah, so, and they'll help you come up with strategies.
I know my counselor does Skype and phone call therapy. So
exactly.
It's very helpful.
And so we're giving you some ideas for boundaries now. I hope you're writing them down. You could always listen to this. It's recorded. You could listen to it over and over. Come up with these boundaries now. You got 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's December 19th. You got a week. Put this all together. You could talk to some people, help you fine tune it.
Yeah. Yep. So what we want you to do is pick boundaries and write them down that are important to you, that the addict or the inappropriate person must adhere to, or they won't be welcome to participate.
Yeah. You're almost setting up deal breakers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
like
I mean, you know, remember about this control thing. You can't control everything. If it's in your house, you have certain more power to control. But really, you got to think about what is a deal breaker.
Exactly.
You know, I'm going out and this person's doing this. I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
This person comes to my house and does this. They're out of here. I'm setting those boundaries. And you got to keep the boundaries simple.
Simple, absolutely.
Doable.
Mm-hmm.
Is it doable? And how
and
do I
short.
Make it doable? Do I need somebody to help me? to get together. Short and to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, you don't need to defend yourself. When you set a boundary, you don't have to defend that boundary.
You don't have to make excuses or anything.
Well, this is the way I feel. Because I'll tell you why. If you try to explain your boundary, first of all, you're making yourself vulnerable to a person you probably don't want to be vulnerable. These are the people who are the act out that you have issues with. And if you try to defend why you're leaving or why you're asking them to leave, then it degrades because it becomes an argument. And they're going to do counter arguments to your reasoning. They're going to make you feel shame, less than. They're going to pick you apart and destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to defend yourself regarding your decisions. This is just my decision. I need to go for me. For me, I need to go. See, you make it about you and you're out of there. All right. So don't argue the points. Let's see. So again, let me give you some examples. All right. So this is for our addict that must comply with. So you're going to put boundaries for your addict. If you're going to come with us, son, to this party or addict or husband.
Or be at our house or be at our house, gatherings.
Then I want to say you have to arrive within 5 minutes of the designated time. You got to be well-groomed. Don't come in here seven sheets to the wind, shirts untucked, looking like a piece of trash. And you don't have to say it that way to them, but you know what I'm saying. You would just say to them, you have to come on time, be well-groomed, dress appropriately. You need to be clean and sober. It is paramount. You come to my door, or you come and you smell of alcohol in your breath, you look intoxicated, you're out of here. That's a deal breaker. You know, you could tell them, you need to be cheerful and have a kind demeanor to people at this party.
And these are just some suggestions to get you brainstorming.
Yeah, because it gets because you know sometimes your addict could be angry. They come in and you should see what happened on the way over here. That cop pulled me over, and he's just anger. It brings stress and tension to your party.
Yeah.
You don't need that. So you're telling your husband, the addict, your wife, spouse, whatever, that you come and you come in a positive spirit, no anger. None of this woe is me stuff, too, because they'll sit around and say, yeah, this has happened to me. And they just take up all the time at a party. They just become the focus of the party as they sit there and go over their woes. No chin on the chest thing. You got their head down like, life sucks. I'm really going through it. No, this is a holiday season. You come to have a good time. If you can't do that and you create a spirit of negativity and so on, boom, then it's over.
This is very important, and you guys aren't going to really like this, but this is very important. If the addict doesn't like your holiday rules, be committed to have a response like this. That makes me sad that you won't be joining us, but that is your choice. He now has to shoulder the responsibility for his decision, even though he may try to blame you.
Yeah.
So he has to take on, when you say that kind of a statement, so remember that. It makes me sad that you won't be joining us, but that is your choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And in the long run, it's going to show that you're healthy, you're setting healthy boundaries, that you can do it. You can do it. I could be a responsible adult, set healthy boundaries, even if inside I may not like it because I'm not used to setting healthy boundaries. Another option is to plan activities with the rest of the family and don't invite this addict.
Yeah, because that would give you relief. You don't have to worry about what he's doing or he might do. Just give yourself that kind of a break.
Yeah, you don't have to come everyone.
No,
yep,
exactly.
Again. So let's get into some strategies, all right? So we just talked about some boundaries there, but let's talk about some strategies. And once you develop these strategies, I just want to let you know it's a good idea to tell your addicted loved one before the holiday arrives, that would be sometime this week, that you have some strategies and boundaries. For example, you could say something like this. We love you, and we'd very much like you to be a part of the family gathering this year, as long as you don't drink or use drugs 24 hours before you arrive or during the time you're with us. If you agree to this, but you don't uphold your end of the agreement, you will be asked to leave and escorted out if necessary.
Wow. Yep.
You see how you're setting that healthy boundaries?
Tell them
ahead. So you have
time.
A strategy, and you're telling them. You could only if you can't comply, then don't come.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to a party with your husband or a spouse and they're a drinker, you tell them these are our boundaries. If we go there and you start getting the seven sheets of the wind, I just want to let you know we're out of there. I'm done. I'm going home. And if you refuse to leave with me, I will leave without you. I will call a friend to come get me.
Mm-hmm.
I will rent a car and I'll leave. I will call a taxi, whatever it is. I just want to let you know ahead of time because you've done this to me time and time again and embarrassed me. Every time you allow someone else to act a bad way, Your tremendous important self-respect is affected.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to tolerate anyone's verbal abuse or physical abuse. Nip it as early as you can and prevent it from escalating.
Yep.
You know, you know, this addiction and all this dysfunction takes the joy out of a holiday season. You've got to decide now what, you know, whether you want them in attendance or not.
So another strategy is lose control. And you're like, huh? What? Lose control? Okay, so how about you're sitting at the table and your mother says, honey, have you tried Weight Watchers lately?
Yeah, right.
Or what are some of the other, you know?
Why do you wear your hair that way? Yeah. You know I don't like it. I don't like your clothes you wear. Why do you still work at that place? You know, these are all negative. These are little jabs. You know they're jabs.
These are all the triggers that immediately can set you back. You know, you've done all this self-help book and support groups, and it just goes out the door.
Yeah.
So you have to plan ahead that this might happen, you know. And so you might feel desperate to make your mom recognize all the hard-won truths that you've learned about and the value and the beauty of your body. You want to argue and explain and get right in there to force your mother to approve of your appearance.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's not going to happen.
Mm-mm. No, you know, you can't control other people. And you could battle with your mother to make her accept you the way you're struggling to accept yourself for who you are, right? Your own body image, your own lifestyle. You're struggling to accept yourself. And here other people aren't, but you know what? You could battle for years. You could spend 20 years trying to appease your mother or somebody else, father, whatever, boyfriend, girlfriend, to get them to accept you, and they never will.
So Moody Beatty says in her book, to unhook from their system by refusing to try to control them.
Yeah. You could never really control their thoughts. You could try to get them to consent. You could try to put an argument together to make them accept you for what you are. But actually, it is your work. Coming to the place of accepting and loving yourself for who you are, really it. Not externals that I need them to validate who I am. I need to come to that place, and you may need help to do that.
And two other things that we wanted to bring out is plan to be a participant observer. So when you go to a program, when you go to a meeting, I mean, when you go to your family or whatever, plan to just observe what's going on. It kind of puts you in a different perspective. And also,
this way you're not there to judge, you're not there to fix or control. You're just watching across the room. You could choose what you want to enter into. You become a part-time observer. So I'm not going to go over there and interact with that group because I know so-and-so's in it and so, and it just pushes my button. I'm just going to watch from a distance. Oh, I could go over here and participate in this and be in this conversation round table because it's okay, people there, and I know I could do it. So you're a part-time observer. Full-time observer means you're just there at the party. You're basically going to try to stay away from almost everything because you know it's a very volatile situation.
Right.
And then in closing,
and then one more is debriefing, to make sure after a gathering that you have somebody you're going to call up and just talk what happened and how it went and just debrief about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you debrief, do not wait too long. Debriefing should take place within shortest period of time as you can, or else you start to forget what your feelings were, what took place there. So do it as soon as possible. Look, we don't have a lot of time. We've already taken 15 minutes with you and going over some strategies, boundaries. There's a lot more. You could go online, Google it, healthy boundaries, holiday season or something, and get more information. Learn to structure up some boundaries and strategies for yourself. All right. So now we want to head into our spiritual segment for tonight. And this is again about a merciful and gracious God who has justice, though, and boundaries. All right. So we're in a holiday season. So I'm going to read you Luke 2, 8 through 11. It says, and there were in the same countries shepherds abiding in a field, keeping watch over the flocks by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came to them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said to them, do not fear, for behold, I bring you good news, a great joy which shall be to all people. For unto you this day in the city of David, a Savior, which is Christ the Lord, is born. So God presents himself as a Savior, somebody to heal us, to take us and restore us in recovery. Hebrews 8:10 says this, I will be to them a God, and they shall be my people, for I will be merciful even to their unrighteousness, and their iniquities I will remember no more. So God portrays himself as a loving God, a forgiving God, a merciful God, even though we deserve some of the results of what we do. He's a merciful God. He's always drawing us. Listen to Luke 4:18. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. The gospel is the good news. This is Jesus talking. He says, he has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty, to set them free, those that are bruised. Doesn't that apply to us? We have a loving God. He's merciful. He's gracious. We see throughout the Bible people come to Christ, a woman suffering from a hemorrhage issue, and she knew that if she would go to Christ and just touch his garment, she would be healed, and she was. There was a Roman servant. He wasn't even Jewish. He didn't even deserve to interact with the Savior of the Jews, as they thought back then. And he came to her and says, my daughter had just died. Can you help her? And Jesus rose and followed him and went there, laid his hand on the maid, and raised her from the dead. Children came to Christ. They came toward Christ. And he said, suffer the little children and forbid them not to come to me. So God wants us to draw near to him. You may not feel worthy. That Roman centurion certain didn't, because Jesus was of the Jews at that time. The woman with her hemorrhage issues, who's embarrassing and shame, she moved toward Jesus. And many, many, many people move toward Jesus. You need to move toward Jesus. You need to move towards your God. You need to move, whether, again, Jewish, Muslim, and in this case, I'm talking from the Christian perspective. You need to move towards your higher power. For the Christians, it's God and Jesus Christ. Now, at the same time, God is a just God. There's justice and boundaries. In Job, it says this, shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall man be more pure than his maker? And what God, there's nobody who is more just than I am. The decisions I make and what I do in this world, there's nobody more just than me. Isaiah says, there is no other God besides me, a just God and a Savior. He combines them both together to show us that I am a Savior. I am willing to save you, help you, heal the brokenhearted, cleanses, but I am also a just God. In Revelation, it says this, that the saved will sing unto God. And when they sing the song to God and Jesus, great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty, just and true are thy ways, thou King of the saints. So God knows what is best. And I'll tell you what, he sets boundaries, doesn't he? Because in Matthew, he says this, and I say to you, Matthew 18:3, except you be converted and become as these little children, drawing unto Jesus. Remember I said that little children would come to him? And except you be converted, become like little children, you shall not enter my kingdom. So God sets healthy boundaries. He will not allow this type of mentality of abuse, sexual abuse, alcohol abuse. We're destroying ourselves. And he says, no, you can't come into my house. I can't have you taint the whole party unless what? Unless you're converted, unless you change, unless you have recovery and healing. And he says, I can do that for you. I can give you, I can heal the brokenhearted. I can give you that recovery. He says, I can. Matthew 13:15 says, for this people's heart is waxed gross, their ears are dull of hearing, their eyes have been closed. Why? Because they at any time they would see and hear, and they should understand with their hearts and should be converted, listen, and that I should heal them. So the tendency for life in this world, because of sin, is to tend to death. Our walk is tending toward death. And he says our eyes and ears are clogged and we can't hear and can't see. Because if we could see, yes, in our true condition, if we're willing to accept our true condition, then he says we would be converted and he would heal us. So our challenge is to come to God, to say, heal me, God. Save me, God. I crawl out from my pit of the gutter with my needle in my arm. My life is in turmoil. Or you, the codependent overfunctioning one, is, Lord, take complete control of my life, because I'm overfunctioning in this addict's life. I'm driving myself crazy and them crazy. You know, I think about God when he was in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve sinned. And what he did? He kicked them out. Do you think God's love is greater than you? Do you think you love greater, more than God? Because I'll tell you this, I love my family and I love my wife. How much do you think I love my neighbor? Less. How much do you think I love the people in some other country? even less. God loves everybody to the max. Mm-hmm. And if the loving God who loves everybody to the max says to Adam and Eve, get out, get out. I will not allow you to destroy this garden, this haven of rest, this place of peace, this place of joy. I will not allow you to destroy it. You shall go out. Now, when he says that, he still loves them, and they go out, and he says, I can still restore you back to come into that garden, but he sets a healthy boundary. Why won't you set the healthy boundary? Why won't you turn around and say, I love you, son. I love you, daughter. I love you, husband. But this is a violation of our household, a violation of our marriage, a violation of our dating relationship, whatever. And therefore, even though I love you, and my love can't even compare to God, I will set a healthy boundary. This relationship is modified. You're out. You can't come to the party tonight. You can't be in my house tonight, or I'm leaving. I'm setting a healthy boundary. Please do not be selfish and think it's about wanting them to love you. That's the work you have to do outside. And so you need to do that, because listen, you allow them to stay at house at the compromise of your children, at the compromise of others, violating them and your children and their sickness. So in reality, because of your sickness, because you won't heal your esteem about who you are and your value, and you think that to have that sick person love you is the ultimate goal, you compromise your children as they see the abuse and his abuse of, or her abuse or of that, and then they bring that into that household. So my challenge to you today is, yes, God is merciful, God is gracious, God is also just, and he sets healthy boundaries, and he will say to somebody, you cannot come in here. So I pray today you will be empowered to set the healthy boundaries that God has modeled for us here today.
That's really good, Bill. I really like that.
That's great. Thank you. We're going to have to move on to our next segment. We've already done our opening charge. We looked at facts, stats, and myths. We've done surviving the holidays with subtle boundaries and strategies. We just went through our spiritual concepts of mercy and grace, justice, and boundaries. And we're going to head into segment five, for where we do a little segment for the recovering addict. Kath?
Oh, absolutely, because we don't want to leave you guys out. I mean, a lot of what we said earlier, you know, was including you also, but this is some specific stuff. So, you know, if you're in recovery and, you know, this is a new year for you and you're not going to be drinking, then we know that this is an emotional time for you and you're emotional, and there's a higher risk that you might want to relapse and you might fall back into your addiction again. So we want to give you some ideas about how to not do that. So my first suggestion would be to prepare. You got to prepare. That's the key. Be aware that the holidays are stressful and accept it.
Yeah, so you notice that, you know, almost mirrors what we do with the family.
It did.
We told the family to prepare ahead. Said, you need to, because you know you're the addict. You interact with that codependent, over-functioning mother or spouse or whatever, and that it sucks you in. So you need to prepare on your side if you're a recovering addict who is working the recovery and trying to stay sober.
Absolutely. When you go to a party, tell the host that you may stay, you know, only a few minutes or an hour, you know, just tell them ahead of time. One of the really key things is to have a non-alcoholic beverage in your hand at all times so that no one tries to give you a drink.
Yeah.
That's very
soda,
important.
Soda, water, anything
like that. And also make sure that you surround yourself with sober support during the holidays.
Yes.
That's very important.
Yeah. If you go to a party and there's some people drinking, do not go hang around that corner if they're getting rebel-rousing and they're your age and they're like, yeah, come on, because they're going to pressure you.
Yep.
Nope.
And Bill and I both want to acknowledge the fact and celebrate you, the fact that you're sober this holiday.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is an amazing accomplishment. Woo! And we love you and are so proud of you.
That's right. Keep it up.
You know, it's the holidays, but you need to celebrate your sobriety.
I love it.
You know,
just
be happy about that your life is in sobriety, and that is really something
worth celebrating. And I don't care if it's only a week or 30 days, and you say, oh, it's only a week,
that's okay.
Doesn't matter. It's sobriety. You haven't had a drink in that 1 week. You haven't had a drink for that month or 2 months.
Absolutely.
Keep going, baby. A lot of people are behind you.
And you can get through these holidays without drinking. You know, just these are the little strategies. So if you know a certain party's going to have alcohol, skip it. Or if you know you're going to go and they're going to have alcohol, make sure you bring a friend with you.
Yeah.
And be sure to bring a non-alcoholic drink so that you always have options.
Never put it down, because see, people won't come up to you and say, hey, have a drink.
Right.
I got one.
Exactly.
Always. That drink does not leave your hand ever. Exactly. The whole time.
Yep. And I think this one is very important. Plan each and every day of your holiday season. So again, prepare. You know, plan to spend the majority of your time with friends and family who are supportive of your recovery.
Yeah, and if your family's not supportive, spend less time with them. You do not have to hang around your family. Take care of yourself.
Absolutely. Another thing that I would like to suggest that a good friend of mine has been doing for years is write out a daily gratitude list. So every day come up with 5 things you're grateful for.
Thankful for, yep.
Ahead of time, talk with your sponsor about what am I working on in my recovery program right now. Have that in the forefront.
Yeah, focus on that.
Focus on that.
The way I interact with people. What's my triggers for drinking or using or drugging? You know, you're working a program. Work it.
Exactly. Another one I really like is write out a letter to yourself ahead of time about how I stayed sober over the holidays. So write it out ahead of time. The act of writing your ideas on paper is very powerful. Write down all the activities and events that will help you have a healthy, happy, and sober holiday season. Okay, so another thing is to stay in treatment. If you go to therapy, continue your therapy during the holidays.
Yep, work the 12 steps. Continue that right through the holidays. Do not take a break.
Exactly. And if you're away from home, you find a meeting. You know, you go online, go on your phone, you find meetings. They're all over the place. Reach out to your therapist, your sponsor, your spiritual advisor, your support group. Spend time with fellowship with recovering people. That's also a really lot
because
of fun.
A lot of the programs will have like a little holiday feast or a little holiday get together.
Yeah,
go there.
Absolutely,
go there. Absolutely,
yeah. Like tomorrow.
Yeah,
we're
going
to go to City of Angels.
City of Angels.
Yep, for their holiday.
Stop on
Naranon
in.
Naranon and City of Angels.
If you're struggling, you want support, come meet some new people. City of Angels tomorrow afternoon, 4:00, Dwyer Street in Yardville, New Jersey. Come on in to say, I heard the radio show. I just came in. I need help and support. You're going to find a lot of friends and you'll make some new friends.
Yeah, and have some friends who are in recovery with you help you realize what your personal limits are. And learn to say no in a way that's comfortable for you. Another thing is self-care is very important during the holidays. So occupy yourself with positive activities to take your mind off of drugs and alcohol. The holidays are a perfect time out to get involved with charity events. I just found out today that big shout out to my brother and his family in Denver. They're going to be wrapping gifts today, and they're going to go buy groceries, and they're actually going to take it to a family.
There you go.
And so there's another suggestion.
And if you can't afford that, you can get involved with some agencies where they provide the wrapping, and you just wrap gifts for children who are needy.
Yeah.
The point is, keep your eyes and ears open. Look for things to get involved in. Maybe a church service that just had a caroling service. You know, you go there and just sit there. You know, as you say, healthy in your addiction, getting away from your addiction, surviving it, go to services, programs, get-togethers. Yeah, very good ideas.
And don't forget about regular exercise. So try to keep your exercise up during. Take a walk, get on your elliptical, go to weightlift. Make sure you keep up your exercising. Remember to slow down. This is a good one for Bill. His therapist just told him. Plan to relax and meditate in your day. Take a few minutes to do that. Relax your standards and reduce overwhelming demands and responsibilities.
Yeah, what I want to say when it talks about relax and meditate, a lot of times, because I'm a recovering addict.
A personality.
It's not relax and meditate upon your garbage in your life about I want to use right now. So you're sitting there and you're saying, yeah, I'm relaxing right now and I'm meditating. I would like to use.
No.
I feel like I want to use.
No.
Oh, my body says it wants to use. No. No, you got to come up with a plan. So you may have to try to read something to get your focus on something else as you relax. Just read a light, encouraging
Listen
book,
to
the
some
big
really
book
nice
or
music.
Something. Listen to some music.
Yeah.
Uh, You know, take that walk for a half hour, but try to think upon those things which are good, even if right now you're in a bad situation. So what can I say is good? I'm a breathing. I'm of the ground. I'm thankful for the sunshine and fresh air. I'm thankful I can walk right now, take my 2-mile walk. I'm thankful for my support team. I'm thankful for AA meetings or Al-Anon meetings. You see what I'm saying? You got to think of positive things, because positive things will uplift you and strengthen you.
Yeah. And avoid HALT, H-A-L-T, hunger, anger, lonely, and tired. If hungry, get something to eat. If you're angry, talk to it about somebody. If you're lonely, go to a meeting or call a friend. If you're tired, get a good night's sleep. So, and another thing is, don't overindulge. Go easy on the holiday sweets. Monitor your intake of caffeine, nicotine, and sugar, and don't try to do too much. Get plenty of sleep. Have some new traditions. Play a new board game. Just do some different thing. Avoid relapse trip. You know, avoid the situations that really make you want to use drugs and alcohol.
Figure them out ahead of time.
Put
your plan together. Where you know if you're going to go to Johnny so-and-so's house, there's going to be a lot of drugs and alcohol. Do not go there. Put your plan together.
And
avoid those triggers.
Yeah, beware of the people and situations that are triggers. And one more thing, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous refers to resentment as the number one offender or the most common factor in failed sobriety. So really watch your resentments during this time.
Yeah, especially if you get around certain people that had violated you or jerked to you, or pain in the neck to you, then you start feeling resentful to them. You start getting upset and pissed and you say, who cares, I'm going to use. Stay away from them. This is not the time of the season to get into resentments. The season's over. You want to work on that, then you can work on that. So we're down to a few minutes. I got to wrap it up already. Time has flown by. I hope we've given some great ideas. In closing, I just want to go down some of the ideas we give you. Write them down. Create your plan and strategy. One, suicide drops off at the holiday season. Watch after the holiday season. It picks up. Start talking to safe people in your circle about the truth in your life. Take a few moments to reflect on what your family is and isn't, a reality check. Then prepare yourself to accept them for who they are. Plan ahead by creating a list of acceptable behaviors, deal breakers. Determine and set your boundaries and the consequences that go with them. Tell your loved ones what those boundaries and consequences are ahead of time. Prepare and develop strategies that will enable you to take care of yourself. Spiritually, understand and accept justice and boundaries go hand in hand with mercy and grace.
That's great.
Addict, plan ahead also. Talk to your sponsor and therapist about what you are working on in your recovery. Daily, make a list of things you are thankful for. Exercise, relax. Meditate. Watch your intake of caffeine, sugar, and nicotine, because they hype you up and they go hand in hand with alcohol and drugs. Remember, resentment is the number one cause in failed sobriety. Do not work on issues that are going to cause resentment to come up. You're at parties, it comes up. Walk away. So in closing, I hope that you have a good holiday season and a Merry Christmas. Take care of yourself, because we here at the City of Angels love and care for you. We want you into sobriety. I just want to say, if you're in need right now, you need help and assistance, you could call City of Angels at 609-910-4942. This is Bill and
Merry
Kathy.
Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. Happy
holiday.
Happy
New Year.
Be safe. We care. Bye-bye.